Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into something really fundamental, that little question we all ask. What would happen if? It's like the spark behind everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
From discovering fire way back when to, I don't know, modern science, it just drives us.
It really does, that core curiosity.
So for this deep dive, we've been reading this fantastic article. It's by Gary Ackerman over on hackscience.education, and the title is Perfect. What would happen if?
Simple title, but packs a punch.
Totally. And it's not just about answering the question itself. It really challenges us to think about how we get to those answers. And maybe more importantly, what kind of hidden stuff might be getting in the way.
And that's really our goal for you today, isn't it? To kind of unpack how that really simple question leads down some pretty complicated roads. We'll touch on the tools we're supposed to use, you know, observation, logic, controlling things.
The scientific basics.
Exactly. But then there's the tricky part, the big one, bias, and how hard it is to actually reduce it. We want to give you maybe a shortcut, a way to see those hidden traps that shape what we believe, even when we feel totally objective, like seeing the blueprint of how we think and noticing the little cracks.
Okay, yeah, let's dig into that.
Yeah.
So Ackerman starts right at the foundation, right? The core of science.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about observation, control, logic, all aimed at understanding nature, figuring out cause and effect, attributing changes to what we think caused them.
Right. And these aren't just, you know, dusty old concepts for a lab coat. They're meant to be practical tools. Observation forces you to just look first before jumping to conclusions.
Like, really look.
Yeah. And control, well, that helps isolate what's really making the difference, cutting out the noise.
Stripping away other factors.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And logic. That's about making sure your argument actually holds water step by step. That A really leads to B based on the evidence.
What's fascinating is how these are basically our like first line of defense against the biases we're going to talk about. They're designed to lead us to reliable conclusions.
Right.
Yeah.
Designed to. But even with that solid foundation, Ackerman points out this huge challenge.
Uh-huh. The bias part.
Yeah. He calls it perhaps the most difficult principle of science to follow, the constant effort to identify and reduce bias. And honestly, reading that, it really it made me think, can we ever fully get rid of it, even with the best methods?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And Ackerman explains why it's so tough. We're usually just unaware. We don't see our own biases.
Blind spots.
Total blind spots. We think we're seeing clearly, making rational choices. But these biases are there, shaping everything. It's like trying to find your keys in the dark when you think you know where they are.
Yeah, good analogy.
He gives a really clear example. Racist and sexist language.
He points out that once you identify that language, once it's challenged, you can consciously work on reducing it. But here's the really interesting bit. It's not just about saying less offensive things, which is vital, obviously.
Of course.
It's that by forcing yourself to change the language, the output, you actually start to challenge the underlying bias itself.
Ah, okay. So tackling the symptom affects the cause.
Precisely. It creates this, like, cognitive dissonance. You have to reevaluate the thoughts, the automatic assumptions that produce that language in the first place.
Yeah.
It forces kind of internal correction.
Wow.
But it brings up that huge question, right? How do you even start fighting something if you don't know it's there, if you can't even perceive its influence?
Yeah, that's the core difficulty. And then Ackerman takes this idea of bias into a slightly different, maybe more subtle area.
Uh-huh.
Particularly in like professional settings. He talks about our preferred methods of thinking and acting.
Oh, okay. Not just the big societal biases, but our personal preferences.
Exactly. It's less about overt prejudice and more about how we fall in love with certain ideas or ways of doing things, especially new, exciting ones.
Right. He uses that great analogy, the shiny object.
Yes, the shiny object.
Like a new teaching method or maybe a new management strategy or even just a new app someone raves about.
Mm-hmm.
It catches our eye. It promises great things. And the trap, the psychological trap, is that once we believe it's going to work,
we start looking for proof that it is working.
Exactly. We become predisposed to see confirmation. Our brain starts filtering everything. We notice the successes, maybe explain away the failures.
Or attribute failures to something else entirely.
Right. We might even sort of unconsciously steer things to get the result we want just because we're so invested. It's like, you know, that new diet.
Oh, yeah. I know this one.
You start it. You're convinced it's the answer. For 2 weeks, every little thing feels like proof. You feel lighter, more energy.
Totally. Confirmation everywhere.
Then maybe a few months later, you're kind of back where you started, wondering what happened. That initial belief just colored all the data coming in.
That is such a perfect example. We've all done that, haven't we? With diets or work projects or tech gadgets. And this brings us to Ackerman's really critical point, the one that shakes things up. Once we believe the method will work, then any data that we collect will confirm our bias. That statement just, it directly challenges the whole idea that we can collect objective data once we're already sold on something.
It really does.
But doesn't that create a problem? Like, how do we ever embrace genuine innovation if we're so suspicious of our own enthusiasm? Can we become too cynical?
That is the balancing act, absolutely. It's not about shutting down new ideas entirely. It's more about adopting maybe skeptical optimism.
Skeptical optimism, I like that.
Acknowledge the potential, but maintain critical distance. Ackerman isn't saying new is always bad. He's questioning the unquestioning acceptance. And that leads to his critique of, say, data-driven educators. But really, it applies everywhere. Anyone claiming their decisions are based purely on data?
Right. Data-driven decisions are huge now.
Huge. But Ackerman suggests they might be fooling themselves and the constituents if that data is just confirming a pre-existing belief.
So the data isn't driving the decision. The decision is selecting the data.
Potentially, yes. If you connect this to the bigger picture, think about marketing campaigns, policy decisions, business strategies, any field where numbers are used to back up a strong conviction. We tend to find the data that supports what we want to be true or what we already think is true. And the danger is, well, bad decisions, wasted effort, lost trust when the data-backed plan fails. It's an echo chamber disguised as evidence.
And this leads to what I thought was maybe the most powerful line in the article, that inversion.
The opinion shaping the facts.
Exactly. Instead of saying they're detailing the facts upon which they base their opinions, Ackerman suggests they might actually be detailing the opinions upon which they base their facts. And that just flips everything, doesn't it? It makes you question the entire process, not just the outcome. Are we finding truth or just confirming our opinions?
It's a profound shift in perspective. It forces you to confront that uncomfortable idea. Maybe our beliefs aren't always the logical endpoint of analyzing facts. Maybe, often, the belief comes first, the preference, the shiny object, and that dictates which facts we notice, how we weigh them, even how we look for them.
Wow.
It challenges that ideal of pure objectivity we strive for. And look, this isn't just some abstract philosophical point. It has real consequences.
How so?
Well, think about public debates. Mm-hmm. People cling to ideas, even with contradictory evidence, by just dismissing or twisting the data, right?
Nice. Happens all the time.
Or in companies, teams might stick with outdated methods they like, finding data points to justify it, instead of genuinely evaluating effectiveness. Mm-hmm. It's a constant battle against how we're wired.
So wrapping this up then, what's the big takeaway for you listening? This whole deep dive into Ackerman's article, it really highlights this ongoing, often invisible fight against bias. Even when we try to be scientific data-driven, our own preferences, those shiny objects, can subtly pull us towards confirming what we already think instead of discovering something new. It's a reminder that understanding isn't just about gathering information, but also about constantly checking the lens we're using to see it.
It really is. And considering Ackerman's background, you know, his books on technology and schools management, he's clearly thought a lot about how this works in practice. It makes you wonder, how can you, in your work, in your life, get better at spotting your own biases?
Yeah.
When you see that new method, that convincing argument, that shiny object, can you pause and ask, what are the opinions here that might be shaping how I see the facts? Maybe try actively looking for stuff that contradicts what you initially think.
Ooh, that's uncomfortable.
It is. Ask, what if I'm wrong? Before you ask, how can I prove I'm right? It's not easy. It's a continuous process of, like, self-awareness.
Really powerful questions to ask ourselves. Maybe just start noticing, you know? Notice when the data seems to line up perfectly with what you hoped for.
Right. Just pause and question it.
Was it objective discovery, or was it perhaps finding facts to fit an opinion, building that muscle, that vigilance seems crucial? Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into critical thinking, bias, and the slippery nature of objectivity.
Always a pleasure.
Until next time, keep asking, what would happen if, but maybe, just as importantly, keep asking, how do I really know?